King. Shri Tasya, of the hungry. Yata, as it is. Itare, in other things. Translation. O Brahmanas, the opulence of the king was so enchanting that the denizens of heaven aspired for it. But because he was absorbed in the service of the Lord, nothing could satisfy him except the Lord's service. Purport. There are two things in the world which can satisfy the living beings. When one is materially engrossed, he is satisfied only by sense gratification. But when one is liberated from the conditions of the material mode, he is satisfied only by rendering loving service for the satisfaction of the Lord. This means that the living being is constitutionally a servitor and not one who is served. Being illusioned by the conditions of the external energy, one falsely thinks himself to be the served. But actually, he is not served. He is servant of the senses like lust, desire, anger, avarice, pride, madness, and intolerance. When one is in his proper senses by attainment of spiritual knowledge, he realizes that he is not the master of the material world, but is only a servant of the senses. At that time, he begs for the service of the Lord and thus becomes happy without being illusioned by so-called material happiness. Maharaj Yudhisthira was one of the liberated souls, and therefore for him there was no pleasure in a vast kingdom, good wife, obedient brothers, happy subjects, and prosperous world. These blessings automatically follow for a pure devotee, even though the devotee does not aspire for them. The example set herein is exactly suitable. It is said that one who is hungry is never satisfied by anything other than food. The whole material world is full of hungry living beings. The hunger is not for good food, shelter, or sense gratification. The hunger is for the spiritual atmosphere. Due to ignorance only, they think that the world is dissatisfied because there is not sufficient food, shelter, defense, and objects of sense gratification. This is called illusion. When the living being is hungry for spiritual satisfaction, he is misrepresented by material hunger. But the foolish leaders cannot see that even the people who are most sumptuously materially satisfied are still hungry. And what is their hunger and poverty? This hunger is actually for spiritual food, spiritual shelter, spiritual defense, and spiritual sense gratification. These can be obtained in the association of the Supreme Spirit, Lord Sri Krishna. And therefore, one who has them cannot be attracted by the so-called food, shelter, defense, and sense gratification of the material world, even if they are relished by the denizens of the heavenly planets. Therefore, in the Bhagavad Gita 8:16, it is said by the Lord that even in the topmost planet of the universe, namely the Brahmaloka, where the duration of life is multiplied by millions of years by earth calculations, one cannot satisfy his hunger. Such hunger can be satisfied only when the living being is situated in immortality, which is attained in the spiritual sky, far, far above the Brahmaloka, in the association of Lord Mukunda, the Lord who awards his devotees the transcendental pleasure of liberation. Om Jnana Tumulam Nasya Jnana Jnana Shalakaya Chakshun Namunitan Yena Tasmaya Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhisthan Stapitan Yena Mutalet Swaya Mukha Kudamayam Dirati Samparantika Mukham Karo Shivachalam Pangam Nangayate Girinya Kripatam Amvande Shri Guru Natarunam Vancha kalpa tribhyascha kripa sindhubhya eva cha titanam bhavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasade Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the chapter is entitled The Birth of Emperor Parikshit. So the example is being given about his forefathers, the previous kings, Yudhisthira Maharaj. And later on in the Bhagavatam, we'll be hearing about the different dynasties, the Vishnu dynasty, the Yadu dynasty, the Madhu dynasty. So we'll be hearing descriptions about these great saintly kings, these Rajarishis, and the kings that came before them, the kings that will come after them, and the king that will be here in the Kali Yuga. So descriptions about these kings and how they perform their duty in terms of taking care of their praja or citizens. It is very important because the king was seen as a representative of Vishnu. Therefore, the kings in a proper society were elected by the brahmanas, by the head of society, who had some kind of transcendental knowledge. And therefore, these kings were Rajarishis because they were taking guidance constantly from the brahmanas. And therefore, because they were so spiritually qualified, they could take care of the entire citizens. So there's been a great emphasis on saintly kings following the example. As Krishna mentions in Bhagavad Gita, Ivam Paramparam Praptam Imam Rajasaya Vidhu Sakalaniha Mahata Yoganasta Parantapa, that he would instruct this Bhagavad Gita to the saintly kings or to the saintly personalities, who would therefore expand it amongst their citizens so that they would also become Krishna conscious. And by the common practice of the saintly kings, these citizens would follow in their footsteps. So it is very important, Lord Krishna, in here this section, to understand that good leadership and good governance is required in order for a society to actually flourish properly. So Maharaj Parikshit, throughout the Bhagavatam, he is inquiring about different personalities. And towards the end of the ninth canto, where he's hearing about the activities of the previous kings coming in disciplic succession, it is being explained there that these kings had certain opulences. But for one to be actually considered, according to the Markandeya Purana, for one to be considered a great king or the emperor of the universe, he had to have at least 12 opulences in vast quantities. So Prabhupada explains them to be horses, elephants, chariots, a wife or wives, arrows, wealth, garland, valuable costumes, tree, spears, a noose, jewels, umbrella, and they should be following regulative principles. And of course, the Vaishnava kings were always be foremost because they were worshipping Lord Krishna. So, towards the end of the ninth canto, Maharaj Parikshit becomes really enthused to hear about specifically the moon dynasty where Lord Krishna appeared. So, explanation of the saintly kings coming in that line. So, we understand that at the birth of Emperor Parikshit, it was Yudhisthira Maharaj who actually arranged for the birth ceremony. So he called in all the astrologers and they could foretell the glory of this this child, Parikshit, who was in the womb of his mother, who came from the womb of Uttara. So the position of Maharaj Parikshit, of course, it is very, very auspicious. Prabhupada also explains how when great personalities, along with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appears, there is a very great constellation in terms of the alignment of the stars. The entire zodiac constellation is highly auspicious. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining two things that satisfy the living being: material sense gratification and devotional service for the satisfaction of the Lord. So by direct experience, at least for some of us, we understand the futility of material sense gratification. That material sense gratification is based on ignorance. Ignorance about the goal of life, ignorance about our identity. And this ignorance further leads us to developing a bigger and bigger false ego, thinking that we are the Ishvara, we are the Purusha, we're the controller. So without understanding the different energies or Shaktis of Krishna, we see ourselves as the controllers of everything in this existence. In Bhagavad Gita, it's explaining prakti kriya manani guna kamani savashaha ahankara vimudhatma kataham iti manyate, that we are thinking ourselves actually the doer. We are thinking that everything is coming by our own accord, by our own efforts, without understanding how Krishna's energy, although it is material, it is providing everything for us. The demigods are administrators of the universe and they are manipulating different material elements to provide for the functioning of material existence. So in every sense, although we think, as this prophet says, we think that we are to be served, but actually we're so dependent. We're dependent on the oxygen, we're dependent on basic sun, we're dependent on the moonshine, we're dependent on the rainfall. Even our body is governed by different directions, by different devatas. They influence certain parts of the body. And the different planetary systems and the stars, depending on our mentality, they will influence us in a certain way. So the ignorance that we face, the illusion that we face, is thinking that we are to be served, but actually we are never to be served. We are the servant of the Supreme Person. So this is the greatest illusion, and this grows more and more when one very enthusiastically engages in material sense gratification, which is temporary and whimsical by nature. So whether it is, you know, mental stimulation, intellectual stimulation, or on the gross level, it is all an illusion if it is not connected with Krishna. So this is material sense gratification. No matter how much as Prabhupada mentions, this illusion, it is extremely huge and it is based on ignorance. In any nation, they have their own calamities, whether it is a food shortage or water or natural resources, etc. So they think that the dissatisfaction in this world is actually caused by all these things. And although they keep on creating more and more, they keep on creating more varieties of food, while you take one main element and you manipulate it, you modify it so many times to create variety, and then you think this is great, I have lots of variety. And we create so many different types of varieties for our stimulation, different types of phones, different types of computers, different types of clothing made from different types of material, one that doesn't soil easily, one soils over a certain period of time. So there's so much variety in material sense gratification. And this is why people think that the more we create proper food, proper shelter, proper defense, the more we'll become happy. But actually it is the reverse. This is the more dissatisfied we have actually become. And we see in the 1970s when Srila Prabhupada was spreading Krishna consciousness, there was so much dissatisfaction in the world in terms of what the citizens were being provided, what the government is actually supposed to be protecting each and every citizen. And we see most citizens of different countries at that time in the world were very dissatisfied with the way in which everything was working. So over history we've had so many different types of riots, different governments falling out, uprising, so many different coups in different parts of the world because of dissatisfaction, material dissatisfaction. And as Prabhupada would often say, the only lacking is the lacking of God consciousness. And that is the real hunger, that is the real thirst that the living entity is searching for. So this thirst cannot be quenched by material sense gratification. No matter how subtle or how gross, this thirst for the living entity, this pleasure that the living entity is looking for, will never be attainable by material sense gratification. Prabhupada explains that the hunger is for the spiritual atmosphere. So we all have to eat, we all have to, you know, be sheltered, we all have to hear certain topics, we like being social. So this can be achieved in a spiritual atmosphere. And because the nature of spirit is that it is not dependent on matter, it is beyond matter. We see with Maharaj Parikshit, he gives an example of himself, the Prabhupada gives an example of him later on in Srimad Bhagavatam, how when he was overcome by thirst, he was traveling in his kingdom and he was thirsty and he went into the hermitage of a sage and asked for water, and of course there was no reciprocation, and therefore his thirst wasn't quenched and he got cursed. And now here we see that when he's hearing spiritual subject matters, Krishna Katha, which is powerful enough to actually get rid, which is the only panacea actually in this Kali Yuga to cross over the board of material existence, he was not affected by so-called material hunger and thirst or sleep. And he was fully awakened to his spiritual nature. So it is not that we cannot live without sense gratification, we cannot live without spiritual sense gratification. So that spiritual sense gratification connects us to the source of everything, Krishna. And by the individual living entity connecting with the Supreme Whole, that entity becomes complete in itself. Right? Here in the Isha Upanishad, it is explained how the complete whole is complete in himself, and all other units that emanate from the complete whole are also complete in themselves. So, in the invocation mantra, Om Purnam Adha Purnaminam, Purna Purnam Udachyate, Purnasya Purnam Adaya, Purnam Eva Vasishyate. Prabhupada is explaining in his transcendental purport that the human one who comes to the human platform, he has complete and perfect intelligence as long as he connects us with his source. The Supreme Being is often compared to a fire, and everything organic or inorganic is compared to the heat and light of that fire. So we're all different parts and parcels, energies of Krishna. We are Krishna's superior energy. But when we come into a lower domain, we identify with that which we are not. Due to ignorance, we identify with matter, and therefore we lose our cognitive factor. We lose our ability to discern between matter and spirit, and we become entrapped in the modes of material nature. But the only way we can be reduced from the modes of material nature is to access a different energy source, to access Krishna's spiritual potency that will get us away from the ignorance, the illusion, and the ahankara, the false ego. So, I'll just read the translation to the invocation to the Ishopanishad. The personality of Godhead is perfect and complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as this phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete in itself. Because he is the complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. So it is because of our ignorance, we do not know that there is a complete arrangement in nature. There is a complete arrangement to our revitalizing the relationship we have with Krishna. There is a complete arrangement to us surviving in this material domain. And due to that forgetfulness, we are making elaborate plans individually to utilize the material resources and to claim those material resources as ours. As we see, you know, you claim a certain part of land. This is Australian land. This is New Zealand. This is, you know, African soil. This is this. So we are claiming that this is ours. And different persons claim that certain parts cannot be infiltrated, or they cannot be used by certain personalities because it does not belong to them. But we understand that everything belongs to Krishna. Everything is coming from Krishna, material and spiritual. Just as, you know, Krishna has different shaktis, different energies. Krishna is like the electricity. And from electricity you can get heat and you can get cooling effects. So although different energies of Krishna produce different effects due to the different types of causes and interaction with the modes, nonetheless, they all belong to Krishna. It is Krishna who created these energies. And the frustration of sense gratification, as we understand, is that we cannot actually, as parts of the complete whole, exist independently or separately from that complete whole. Just as the hand cannot exist separately from the body, the hand has to be united with the body. So that is real yoga, that is real union. So hence, understanding this point, one can, as Prabhupada is mentioning, that one can understand that we're just eternally connected to that whole, and we are meant to serve that whole. We are meant to serve Krishna. So when we do this, we're actually in our proper sense perception. We are utilizing our human form of life in a proper way. Anything that is not directed, any work that is performed and not in line with Vishnu or Krishna, it is a useless labor. It causes bondage, karma bandhana, which means you'll have to come back for repeated birth and death. So we always have to be in line with Krishna. And Krishna distributes himself through the Bhagavad Gita, through Srimad Bhagavatam, and through the saintly personalities in disciplined succession who are repeating his instructions. So Krishna would instruct transcendental knowledge to the different kings, to Manu, to the sun god, and they would distribute this knowledge also to their descendants. And in that way, that knowledge would be carried. And when that succession was broken, Krishna himself would reappear to establish the religious principles. And of course, enact his pastimes as Lila Purushottama. The understanding of the absolute truth is that he is the supreme person. So the absolute truth is personal, not impersonal. So Krishna is Lila Purushottam. And because of those pastimes, the individual living entities can become attracted to Krishna's pastimes, and they can become attracted to the person, Krishna. And by becoming attracted to Krishna on a daily basis, Prabhupada explains, just like the denizens of Vrindavan, they see Krishna as Nitya Utsava. Like seeing Krishna is a daily festival. That is the topmost understanding. So Maharaj Parikshit is going to inquire further from his spiritual master into subject matters about the activities of Krishna. And after this inquiry throughout the Bhagavatam, he will take us to the highest platform of hearing Krishna's pastime with his dear devotees. So we'll be hearing a lot about Krishna's position in terms of his tattva, how he had a certain type of relationship with the material energy, how we have a certain type of relationship with the material energy, and who's the source of both, and who's the controller of both. So having understood all of that, it is easy for us to accept this person, Krishna, as supreme. Because he always remains aloof, although he creates material systems, he himself is not influenced by them. So Krishna is supremely independent, and he acts however he likes. So our bliss, our complete satisfaction and pleasure can only become complete when we connect with the complete whole, Krishna. So Prabhupada ends this purport by explaining how even in the topmost portions of this universe, these hunger pangs, this material sense gratification that can never be fulfilled, still exists, although one can try to fulfill their material pangs for millions and millions of years, still it will never be accomplished. Even in Brahmaloka, it will never be accomplished. But by Krishna's mercy, Krishna arranges situations where even those inhabitants can have an opportunity to engage in his pastimes and be rewarded to go beyond Brahmaloka into the spiritual sky, into the Vaikuntha planets. We know that when Bhumidevi appeared as a cow and approached Lord Brahma, that the demonic tendencies were overburdening the earth, they of course went to the ocean of milk and prayed to Lord Vishnu. And Lord Vishnu responded to Lord Brahma's prayers by explaining that he himself will take birth in the Yadu dynasty, and that he is summoning all the demigods, different demigods, to take birth also in that family. And by doing so, they would get trained up to serve and to witness the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And by being in his pastimes, they would get elevated into the Vaikuntha planets. So that is what happened when a living entity, if a living entity moves from one body to another, they go to a place where Krishna is enacting his pastimes, and they get trained to serve Krishna. They get trained in perfect Krishna consciousness, and at the end of that life, they get transferred to the original abode of the Supreme Person. So Krishna bestows his mercy even to those on this Brahmaloka planet by asking them to reappear in his pastimes when he descends into this material sphere. So nothing, although Maharaj Yudhisthira, as we're hearing, was extremely opulent, and all the great kings who came in his line were extremely opulent. You know, when Devaki would get married, or when the different princesses would be getting married, you know, their father, the king at that time, would give an enormous amount of wealth, dowry. So thousands of elephants, thousands of chariots, thousands of horses, garlanded sometimes with gold. Their hooves will be made of gold, there will be gold garlands on them, flowers, different types of maidservants, hundreds and hundreds. So there was so much opulence for these kings. They had the most qualified wives. They had the most of everything in terms of opulence. They had all the 12 opulences listed in the Markandeya Purana to be considered an emperor. But still, the greatness of Maharaj Parikshit was that he wasn't attached to it, to any of it. All he wanted was to serve. His satisfaction was in serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that is why he would perform Rajasuya Yagyas. It was meant to glorify Krishna, not himself. In that sacrifice, Krishna would be worshipped first to show that he is the topmost person. So this was the glory of Maharaj Yudhisthira Maharaj. And Parikshit Maharaj coming in his line was ecstatic hearing about his forefathers. The same Yudhisthira Maharaj performed the birth ceremony for Maharaj Parikshit and created an auspicious ceremony and event. So although these kings, Yudhisthira Maharaj, the kings appearing in the Yadu dynasty, they were highly qualified materially, but spiritually they were even more qualified because they knew that their real pleasure, their real interest was in worshipping the Supreme Personality of God. That's where their taste was coming from, not from the material sense gratification. Their real pleasure came from satisfying the Lord by rendering devotional service. So Krishna's pleasure comes first for the devotee. And as in the third canto, Srila Prabhupada explains how the perfect disciple or the perfect wife in the pastime between Devahuti and Kadama Muni, Prabhupada explains that Devahuti served her husband with Gauravena and Vishwambena. And Gauravena meant that Devahuti made the instruction, Devahuti made the mission of her husband, who was her guru, her mission, her life and soul. So similarly, Prabhupada explains that this is also the mood of a disciple, that the disciple takes the mood of her spiritual master and makes it her life and soul, or his life and soul. So Maharaj Parikshit is also hearing from Sukadeva Goswami topics about Krishna. He's hearing Krishna Katha because he only has a few days to live. They're both liberated souls, but they have common ground. They have one mission in life, and that is to hear and narrate the pastimes of Krishna. So this is a wonderful service attitude, to make the mission of one's guru, make the mission of Krishna our life and soul, to make that our mission, spreading Krishna consciousness. So gradually we'll hear in this chapter explaining the birth of Emperor Parikshit. We'll hear how the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his omnipotent form would protect his pure devotee Maharaj Parikshit while he was still in his womb, and how Maharaj Parikshit ruled in such a way because he had been blessed by his seniors and because he was a pure devotee of Krishna. So the proper way, the Vaishnava way, is to follow in the footsteps of previous acharyas and always depending on Krishna and not on any other situation. So I'll stop there and I'll ask if there's any comments or questions on this verse. Yes, Prabhu.
In fact, I've got two questions. Mm-hmm. I'll ask one question and see if no one is asking them and answer the question. Okay. So there's a, the first question is, we're talking about the false ego, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in third book of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking about the hierarchy, right? You know how the intelligence is above the mind and the soul is above the intelligence, right? Mind, intelligence, and soul, right? Mm-hmm. So the false ego component is not being spoken about, right? So perhaps, is the false ego a component of the mind or intelligence?
The false ego is a conglomerate factor. So it means when we are contaminated, our mind, our intelligence, our body is thinking, I am African. That is false ego. False ego means that you are misidentifying with something that you are not. That is illusion. The basis of ignorance is ahankar. So that ahankar comes out through our mind, intelligence, and body. The first covering is ahankar. That is it. It groups everything together. So because of our ahankar, we have a certain intelligence. Because of our false identification, we have a certain type of mind. Because of a certain type of false ego, we're given a certain type of body. So the sum total of this body we have here is a result of our false ego, our misidentification with matter.
So in the hierarchy in which Vishnu is mentioning mind, intelligence, false ego, mind, intelligence and soul, right? Perhaps the false ego was left out there. Then the false ego is
the false ego is covering the soul.
Component of the soul, right?
It is covering. So we are covered. Right now we're not acting on the soul platform, we're acting on the false ego. So the false ego is kind of acting like the supreme. So the false ego covers the real identity. The false ego covers the soul. So the false ego is a component which means there's misidentification in terms of our subtle and gross body. It's nicely explained in the Nectar of Devotion. When we explain, you know, the cycle, bijam, kutam, papam, aparabdha, parabdha, karma, the false ego is nicely explained there. So in terms of hierarchy, the first covering, when you fall into this, from the spiritual world, the first covering is ahankar. That's false designation. And because of that false designation, it gets infiltrated into our intelligence, into our mind, and out through the body. The body, material body means false ego. It means the ahankar principle. And once one is reawakened into their constitutional position, the ahankar principle, the I'm the doer, I am black, I'm white, that falls off. It's kind of like, you know, when snakes, after a certain time, the outer covering, the outer skin falls off. So when we become purely Krishna conscious, the fire of Krishna consciousness burns the false ego. And then our spiritual, our buddhi, our intelligence in relation to Krishna is enlightened. Our mind becomes purified. Our mind becomes infiltrated with the Vasudeva of consciousness. That's what happened when Lord Krishna took birth in the mind of Vasudeva. Prabhupada explains in those purports that the mind also becomes purified, becomes purely Krishna conscious. So when the ahankar principle is gone, the Lord takes over mentally, intellectually, and then the spirit soul is reawakened. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The false ego acts through the intelligence, through the mind, and through the body.
There's no, see, even though they say mind, intelligence, false ego is a sucky body, pregnant body, yet the false ego is not a very good interaction with the mind.
The false ego is the binding agent.
Today, the parents do not see that they need to consult a data room.
So, if you have a PEMHO account, there will be an email going out about the
drones.
The drones of Sita Devi. We can read about it. You can tell us tomorrow morning. I will not speculate.
Question over here.
Oh, sorry.
I just wanted to comment on what you said. When it explains in the third chapter about these levels of the senses and mind,
the body, the senses,
the intelligence they are speaking about is the intelligence, the spiritual intelligence. And the spiritual intelligence is above the false ego. So the false ego makes the mind think in certain ways. So the spiritual intelligence is higher than the false ego, which makes the mind think, oh, I need this and I will be happy, I need this to be safe. Basically, we know what the false ego does. It makes it think. So the intelligence which was mentioned is and can be strengthened by the spiritual practices. Basically, the spiritual intelligence is not material. That's
what I understand.
So the false ego will be below the intelligence.
It,
exactly, if you want
to ask. Yeah, well, the spiritual intelligence is the different energy towards just a normal mind.
Yes,
yeah,
so material intelligence. Material intelligence is only a subservient to the material mind. Because the mind wants, oh, I want this, I don't want that, and the intelligence just work out how to get it or how to avoid it. That's basically what material intelligence, but spiritual intelligence says, no, you know, this is better, this you shouldn't do, this is not good for your spiritual life, that's what you need to do. So one is under the influence of the ego,
and
one is under the influence of the soul. And the knowledge, the spiritual knowledge, and according to how much spiritual strength you have, you will be able to control the mind and the senses.
So if our intelligence is not built, and intelligence Prabhupada says our intelligence is sharpened by studying Shastra. So if our intelligence is not sharp, then the mind is dictating to the material intelligence. And that's the land of false conception. But if our intelligence is sharp due to Krishna Katha, then you know the intelligence is on a higher platform, then the intelligence is working in its proper faculty to discriminate between what's right and what is wrong.
Also in Bhagavatam said the intelligence is strengthened by meditation on the lotus feet of the Lord. And that's really helpful if we chant and do that, that's really helpful.
Yeah. So we're gradually making our way through Krishna's form by studying Bhagavatam. So you meditate on the Bhagavatam, you hear the Bhagavatam, you are sharpening your intelligence, and that takes you. But this takes us away from ahankara principle, the false ego.
So coming back to the second question, you mentioned about going back to God, the devotees that go have the pastimes, you know, Krishna, along with Krishna, and then go back. So I heard or I read something that the exit point from the material universe to the spiritual universe is, or the gateway, you know, happens only in two planets. One is Bharat planet, the other one is Brahma's planet. Is it true? So only in these two planets one can go to the Brahma's abode. Other planets is bit hard and difficult. So could you justify that?
What do you mean exit?
Gateway. If one can go to the spiritual world, one is with the other planet.
From the Earth planet?
From Indra planet you cannot go. Or from, you know?
Lower planet.
Yeah. So,
have you heard that? I haven't heard that. I can't comment. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you.